It's time for the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame Inductee Spotlight Show, brought to you by David Adams and KeyBank. Now, here's your host, Howard Simon.
And a very good Saturday morning to you. Nice to be back. It is that time of the year for our series of shows spotlighting the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame induction class. This, of course, the class of 2024. Today and the next three Saturdays in the same time slot, 10 to 11, we'll be getting everybody on, or there are a couple of folks going in posthumously. We'll be getting on people who knew them, obviously. We'll be getting folks on to talk about this year's class. It is an outstanding class, which I'll get to a little bit later in the show. And we'll also be telling you how you can get tickets for the event. I'll give you that information in a moment. We'll eventually tell you about the auction. There's always a great auction involved tied into the Hall of Fame induction. So over the course of our four shows, we'll be telling you about some of the items that are up for bid, and I'll give you all the information on how to do that. So I hope you sit back, relax, and enjoy the many different stories we will cover with the many different people who are being honored for their outstanding accomplishments here in Western New York sports. The 34th annual induction ceremony and dinner, if you'd like to mark this down, and you can get some tickets, early bird sale is going on. The dinner is November 12th, that's a Tuesday night, at the Buffalo Niagara Convention Center. There are tickets on sale now. If you'd like information about it, buffalosportshalloffame.com. As I mentioned, there is an early bird sale going on right now, so you can save a little money. That's going on through the end of this month, through September 30th. $130 for an individual ticket. If you'd like a table of 10, it's $1,300. You can save a little bit, get your tickets, make sure you don't miss this outstanding event. And again, that's going on through the end of the month, that early sale at buffalosportshalloffame.com. You can also take out an ad in the program to congratulate an inductee if you'd like. And also, you can donate to the all-important Amateur Sports Development Fund that they have through the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame. We'll take a short break. We'll come back with our very first guest of the show today. I'm really excited because I worked alongside this wonderful sports reporter and journalist, Vic Carucci. We'll kick things off in a moment. It's the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame Induction Show on WGR.
Now back to the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame Inductee Spotlight Show, presented by David Adams and KeyBank. Once again, here's Howard Simon.
And welcome back. We're going to get to our first guest in a moment, but I got to tell you a quick story before we welcome our first guest, because this is one of the guys that I learned from when I first got here. When I got here, I got hired in 1989 by a radio station in the Falls. Even though Vic was working in print at the Buffalo News, I got on the Bills beat, I don't know, somewhere around 90 or 91. I had no idea what I was doing. I never covered a professional club on a regular basis. And I was, you know, this young kid, you know, going, what? The Bills? Oh my God. And they're really good. So it was guys like Vic, Larry Felser, Vic Carucci, that I would watch and watch Vic go about his job on a day-to-day basis. The guys from Rochester, Sal Majorana, Leo Roth, I would watch them, how they went about doing interviews, how they went about doing their work, what storylines were they writing about, how they were preparing to handle the workload for each week to get, you know, readers ready for each game. And it was a valuable on-the-job learning experience. And now I get to welcome Vic Carucci to the show and congratulate him officially on being a member of the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame, class of 2024. Mr. Carucci, congratulations, sir.
Howard, thank you so much. And, you know, as you were talking about that time, those memories come flooding back. And I vividly remember that, the interaction. I think that's of the many things I've loved about the blessing that has been this career. It's working with, you know, so many of those great people, a mentor like Larry Felser, Rick Azar, if you want to go TV, Van Miller, all those people who were influential to me when I first got to this market in 1982. And then, you know, a young Howard Simon, coming into the picture along with others, a young Sal Majorana, and how I think the reward of doing this job is when you hear what you just said, like, okay, somebody was watching, and guess what, you've experienced this, and now you're many years, and you're a Buffalo Broadcast Hall of Famer, and congrats on that, my friend, and I think you realize it too. someone's watching. Someone's always watching.
Yep.
So do your best. I think do your best, or at least be aware. Yeah.
Now I wanna talk to you before we get into your covering the Bills. There's so much ground to cover. Vic and I could probably do 2 hours, but we can't do that. I want to get into your backstory a little bit, Vic. Why did you decide initially? When was it, and what made you want to get into journalism for a career?
Yeah. So Howard, for me, I fell in love. I mean, I was typical, like all kids growing up in it was a suburban neighborhood in central New York. You morning till night, you played other than
sure.
in the summer. I mean, the school days, but it was play sports,
yep.
play something if there was a ball involved. And it was that kind of neighborhood. And I happened to be one of a couple of guys who would organize those games, make the phone call tree, so to speak, on the dial phones. And then as it progressed, I realized the sport I loved best was the NFL, and I just became so ingrained as its popularity rose in the 70s, basically. And I realized I just was obsessed with it. My first thought was, hey, maybe someday I can play in the NFL. Those dreams faded very quickly when I realized I had zero skill for that. Then coaching became a thing that I thought about and researched and talked with high school coaches that we had and got, you know, some really good information, took the books out of the library. I realized this is something that could be done without having, say, a playing career behind you if you could bring the knowledge. And others have made it, as you know, Bill Belichick being pretty notable in this regard. You know, it's certainly Sean McDermott didn't play a lick of pro ball, but had an outstanding small college career. But anyway, beyond all that, then the next thing was the newspaper business. And that's what it was, the newspaper business. It wasn't the media.
Right.
It wasn't, you know, TV or radio or, you know, no ESPN. And that's where I, for whatever reason, that I started gravitating. I said, I can be close to the game, be right with it. And satisfy that urge. There was only one problem, Howard. I had no clue what the hell I was doing when it came to writing or that element. I realized you actually had to write something, and that was not a skill I had. And I had an English teacher. Her name was Mrs. Jackson. When I was realizing that, I said, "Hey, I want to do this," and she said, "Well, you've got to bring your grades up." When it comes to English, number one. Number two, if you want to get on the student newspaper, you've got to carry a minimum of a B average in English. So I did all those things, got the C to a B, and then it was pursuing the sports editor's job of mm-hmm. that student newspaper. And I said, oh, there's going to be so much competition for this. No one wanted it. They were all academic nerds. They weren't, you know, they were the smart kids. I was the sports goof.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned the media landscape, and I think that's interesting. And I don't mean this to make it sound like you and I are old, but when Vic and I were growing up, you're right, there was no ESPN, there was no Twitter, there was no internet. So it's not like you could log onto your computer when you were a little kid and read any columnist across the country that you wanted like you can now. So when you were growing up and when you were saying, I want to do this, writing, journalism, you love sports, were there writers, columnists in your newspaper, or you could buy Sports Illustrated, you could buy Sporting News, you could buy Sport Magazine. Were there guys that you read and thought, you know, I love their writing, or I want to do that for a living, be that guy for a living?
Yeah, absolutely. Dick Young was a name on New York Daily News
that
jumped out at me for sure. Jimmy Breslin, who started as a sports writer, but of course became kind of a general columnist, his writing style captivated and fascinated me. Locally, there was a guy named Phil Spartano. That name isn't going to resonate here, but he was the local sports editor. And I had written him a letter. I was in junior high school and asking for advice on a career as a sports writer. And one day out of the blue, as I'm sitting in, like, you know, a math class, and one that I certainly didn't enjoy and would have loved any reason to leave. And somebody from the guidance counselor's office comes in and calls, Scrooge, can you come out of the class? Well, usually that meant someone in your family died. It wasn't a good thing when somebody's calling you out. So I go down to her office And Phil Spartano was there. He made this impromptu visit. And you know, I don't know what prompted him to do that. I don't know if that was something he routinely did. But he sat with me and answered questions and enhanced my interest more and more. And then from that came a part-time gig of $7.50, Howard, I got to either get, you know, box scores, track results,
yep.
Writing assignments, but I was still teaching myself or learning how to type before I ended up taking typing classes in school, in high school, and realizing, okay, and that's it. You're working with typewriters. You're working on paper in the day. And like you said, radio wasn't talk radio like GR, or what I do, Sirius XM, NFL radio. It's radio then, you know, you didn't have that component
right.
of sports. And if you were going to be in something other than print, it was, you had to be the play-by-play person, right? Or the analyst of game coverage. So neither, you know, I knew it was going to be that. And I saw the pathway there, for me. And another one more quick. Bob Oates is a name. He's a legendary, late legendary writer for the LA Times. So my favorite team growing up in Central New York was the Los Angeles Rams, of course.
Oh, okay.
And I followed the Rams closely. I knew he was the guy. Roman Gabriel was their quarterback mm-hmm. in the late game, and he covered that team. And CBS did a feature on him for one of its pregame shows. And I see him beginning his day, you know, kisses the wife, leaves the house after breakfast, goes to the L.A. Coliseum, has his seat on the 50-yard line as he's setting up his portable Olivetti typewriter, which I would later use in my early days, and covers the game. And I said, I can do this, get a 50-yard line seat at the L.A. Coliseum and cover my Rams. That's, you know, that's me. I can do that.
We are with Vic Carucci, formerly of the Buffalo News. Vic is one of the members of the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame class of 2024. All right, now let's fast forward. You mentioned you get here in 82, Vic. You get hired by the Buffalo News. I would read the paper every day because that was part of my learning process. And I would read you and Larry Felser and the great late Jim Kelly, Milt Northrup, Mark Gaughan, fellow Buff Stater, who was at Buff State when I was there. Those are some great writers and great journalists. What was it like when you guys were all together being part of that sports department?
Yeah, you nailed it. The greatness of the crew, not only their talent, but these are also wonderful human beings. I learned so much from Larry, again, a father figure and definitely old enough to be my dad along the way, but we traveled together. And I'd say my most meaningful times with Larry, we always got, when we'd go to Bills road games to cover, we'd sit cross aisle. That was our thing. Each one of an aisle seat, so we'd get it next to cross aisle from each other and have our conversations on the way. And it wasn't about, most of our conversations were about him raising his family, his two daughters. I was still at the time a very young, it was before we had kids. And then when we had young kids, I'm taking kind of life parental lessons from this man.
Yeah.
And the other thing I learned from Larry was to represent not only the Buffalo News well, wherever we went, whatever press box, he reminded me, he said, look, when you're out there, you're more than Vic Carucci, I'm more than Larry Felser. You are representing your newspaper and your city. And people remember, people think Buffalo, this small town, this, you know, kind of podunk place in the league when you go to New York and all this other places, and look the part. So put the tie on, wear the jacket, you know, and that resonated because he always was this class act. And of course he had his column for the Sporting News, which gave him kind of a national profile. And that was the other thing. I realized the other thing I wanted from covering this team locally, regionally, the Bills, was to also be a national voice, and I did get some of those opportunities as well.
So you're on the Bills beat. I wanted to ask you about it because your time on the Bills beat includes arguably the glory years. No offense to the 64 and 65 AFL championship teams, but the four straight Super Bowls, those fabulous teams, late 80s and into the early 90s. I knew it at the time, Vic, and I think I grew more appreciative of it later in life. Like I knew at the time, like, oh my God, I'm getting paid to watch these guys play. Like, how cool is that? Because we knew it was a special group of players. But what was it like for you, now that you look back on it, being on the beat at that time, covering those players, Hall of Famers, those teams, what did that mean to you? What was that like for you?
Yeah, and when I look at what I've done, what this career has been all about, I think it's two things. Longevity, important. Sticking to it. Understanding it's not the easiest, even though it's a very cool way of life, not the easiest way of life.
Yep.
Guess what? You work weekends. We work weekends in this business, right? The games are usually played. I know some are played during the week, but the majority is a weekend life. And then the other part of it, besides sticking with it, was getting to experience what you just described when this team rose to such national prominence. And frankly, Howard, that is when you made those connections, the networking mm-hmm. on a national scale, because you became, now this is, as you say, prior to Google research and all yep. the different things you could do at your fingertips, it was real conversations. It was phone calls. It was networking with other writers by phone and generally or in press boxes. Everybody wanted to know, couldn't get enough info on what is this Buffalo Bills team that keeps going to Super Bowls all about. And I remember one time, and another thing happened along the way. I became president of the Pro. I was vice president and president of the Pro yeah. Football Writers of America. I in no small way was the Bills' success attached to that, because it just in elevated your profile. Two, it was. I remember one Super Bowl where the PFWA organized a press conference for myself and then a writer from one of the other teams. I don't know if it was Dallas or I forget, or my Giants, one of them. But one of those Super Bowls where they separately did these press conferences so that we wouldn't have to be pulled by every single person who saw us walking through a hotel or yeah. at a press conference to answer questions about the team we covered.
Let me ask you this. I got a question for you, Vic, that I always get. And I always struggle a little bit because it's really hard to come up with one clear-cut answer, but I do have someone in mind. I'm curious who you do. So fans will always say, hey, who was your favorite Buffalo Bill to cover? So who was yours?
Yeah, well, to some extent, and this was a Larry Felser answer is like, tell me who your
favorite child, right?
Favorite child,
right?
It feels somewhat like that. But I have to say, the most enjoyable, the most fun person was Fred Smirlus, just because of his sense of humor, his irreverent way of going about everything. Now, the other thing that happened in the course of doing this job was collaborating on some books. Did 11 of these, 12, one that didn't get published, that was with Jack Kemp, because he pulled out of a presidential run, but we actually did finish the book. But anyway, doing all these collaborations on books, and Fred was one of them, called By Your Nose, we had more laughs, side-splitting kind of laughter, putting that together, and that was the same guy, and I think it was Chuck Pollack, who did a review of the book. He said, all of us, he had this line, and I'm paraphrasing, but Chuck Pollack from the Olean Times, great writer, said, all of us would go to Fred's locker because you knew you were going to get a good quote. He goes, one of us spent more time there with his notebook than the rest of us, meaning me, and we got a book out of it, so it was fun.
Hey, last thing for you, Vic, and I don't want to steal any thunder from the speech you're going to give on November 12th at the dinner, but I always ask all of the inductees the same thing. Obviously, it's a very special honor. It means a lot to you, and I'm sure it means a lot to other members of your family, whether they're with us now or have deceased. Who comes to mind for you? Who would you like to thank in terms of your family that have been such a big influence on your life to get you to this point?
Well, I'm blessed to tell you that my mom, who is 95, she'll be 95
oh, wow.
in February, is still with us.
Awesome.
Still doing great. I mean, has everything going on, including mobility, eyesight, hearing, cognitive, everything. That's the woman who spent countless hours with trying to get this knucklehead to get his English homework done in the dining room of our house in central New York. But, you know, this I go nowhere in this business without my wife, Rhonda, who was the rock foundation of a family. Howard, you know what this job entails, mm-hmm. the crazy hours, the crazy travel, I lost count of how many times. I live in the North Towns, but being in Orchard Park after a full day of coverage and then into the night, and then sometimes spending part of that night sitting in Bill Polian's office while, you know, going over some, he was kind enough to go over some film with me, let me see things and understand things better. And I felt that investment was worthwhile. But by the time you get home, our two then young kids are in bed. And then those two girls, you know, Kristen and Lindsay, who grew up to be these fab, incredible moms, professionals in what they do, working in the area, staying in the area, and blessing us with our four grandchildren, two each from these women. And it's been the best. I mean, most of my adult life has been in Buffalo. So this honor, which I still, to this moment, I pinch myself and say, this really happened. I mean, you know, Howard Simon's actually asking me about this. But Howard, I'd be remiss. Yourself, others, the support of everybody. It's this kind of town, and having opportunities. You and I doing that Empire Sports Network show, yep. That we did, Pro Football Focus. I mean, Bob Kaczynski, who got us together to do that. You know, we're lucky. I always tell people, right? And you and I are supposed to be sort of retired, I think. And if I'm not mistaken, you're sitting behind a mic right now. I'm talking with you. I don't know, you know, and I'm going to go on the air with SiriusXM NFL Radio at the top of the hour. So I guess we can't get this stuff up, bro.
No. Well, listen, you're great at what you did. You kept tons of Bills fans over the years in close contact with their team, with your writing and your reporting, but you're also, it's competitive, but Vic was a good dude. If you ever needed any advice, any questions, any help covering the team, he was just a good guy. He was always there. He wasn't that cutthroat, even though he was fighting to beat us for scoops, which he did most of the time. So Vic, congratulations again. It's well-deserved. It's a great honor. I'm proud to be able to call you a friend and have a great time at the dinner.
Well, same here, Howard, and thank you so much. I'm so looking forward to this. And again, I can't thank the board members of the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame enough for bestowing this honor on me and putting me in this incredible class of 24. But the entire, you know, the entire hall, those names, you get chills when you see who is inducted before us.
Good to talk to you again, Vic. Thanks, man.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
Talk to you soon. Vic Carucci, former Buffalo News sports writer, joining us, a member of the Class of 24, Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame. Dr. Bridget Nyland is a member of the class as well, and she will join us next on the induction show on WGR.
Now back to the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame Inductee Spotlight Show, presented by David Adams and KeyBank. Once again, here's Howard Simon.
All right, Plan B, little change of plan. We're going to have Dr. Bridget Nyland joining us around 10:40. But since we just heard about David Adams and store they have out on Transit, that is where you will find then amazing collection of sports memorabilia on display. Free of charge. Walk in, see it whenever you want. And to talk a little bit more about that is John Boutte, site chairman for the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame, and the guy who has, I'm going to say, the greatest collection of Buffalo sports memorabilia in his home that anybody has in Western New York. John, it's Howard Simon. Good morning. Nice to talk to you again.
Howard, it's always a pleasure.
So you have a display at David Adams Card World. Let's talk about how did that come about, and then we'll get into the significance of having it there.
Well, before we get into that, I want to congratulate you first. I mean, what an honor for you to be the host of the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame induction ceremony this year. Obviously, I'm joking. I'm congratulating you for your broadcast.
By the way, John, I only got it because Paul Peck is working a UB football game that night. So I was kind of like, is there anybody around? I don't know. Let's just go get Howard. But thank you anyways.
You're coming out of the bullpen, Howard.
I am. I'm the reliever.
That's right. We're happy to have you.
My pleasure.
Anyway, back to your question. It's been a long, long process. As you know, The Buffalo Sabres were gracious hosts to us for probably 20 years sure. at the arena. We had a beautiful display down there at the arena right outside the Sabres store. And 2018 came, and they called and said, you know, hey, we've got some plans that we'd like to expand that Sabres store area. And we're hoping that you'd understand and try to find another place for your display. Yeah. And, you know, of course, we absolutely. I mean, the Sabres have been so good to us. You know, 20 years rent-free down there and always helpful with whatever they did. So we understood. So I went down there on a Saturday morning and bought a bunch of totes and packed the old display up and packed it away. Actually, the Sabres let us keep the memorabilia in their basement for a couple of years. So, you know, we didn't have to move far with our stuff. The unfortunate part is, you know, we love to celebrate our inductees, and there's no better way than with a visual display. Mm-hmm. And so we started a process of looking for a place that could host us. We looked at the Seneca One Tower. We talked with Doug Jamal. We went to the Buffalo Grand Hotel, Harry Stinson. We looked at the Buffalo News Building. So we were really doing our work trying to find a home. Well, COVID hit.
Yep.
Kind of put a stop sign on that. So just by happenstance, Dave and Adam's owner, Adam Martin, developed a relationship, personal relationship with one of our board members, Mark State. And over a beer one night, he says, hey, whatever happened to all that stuff they used to have at the arena? And Mark said, well, it's all in storage. Told him a story. And says, well, why don't you come and bring it in our retail location on Sheridan? And he says, are you serious? And he says, sure. We got enough space. And I would love that. I mean, sports stuff in our store would fit in perfectly. So they kind of handed that over to me. We hired a contractor to build a display, big, huge case. I basically used the template from my basement to come up with this display at Dave and Adams. So it was a process of probably over a year building cases, transporting the few cases that we had left from the arena over, bringing the memorabilia and the totes over and everything like that. So it's been a long, long process, but in the end, I'm sure you saw, it turned out fantastic, and we are so proud and so honored to be with Dave and Adams. Adam Martin, so generous with his time and his money. We got a $21,000 a gift from the Renaissance Foundation to help us with that, to cover a lot of the costs. So we're very thankful for that, and now we have a home. And it's wonderful.
John, tell our listeners or give our listeners an idea. Obviously, I don't need you to tell me every item. But generally, what kind of things would they see on display over at Dave and Adams?
Well, we have so many big name inductees. And again, people that are not big name inductees, we have Ilio DiPaolo's wrestling boots. You know, is there a bigger name in wrestling than Ilio DiPaolo? His family, Dennis, gave us his boots to put on display. We have Ron Jaworski's Eagles game jersey that's on display. We have Steve Messler's Olympic outfit that cool. he marched in the parade in the Olympics when he won gold medal in the bobsled. We have, you know, bowling balls from Nin Angelo, Liz Johnson's bowling jersey. We have just, I can't even think of Warren Spahn's hat, signed ball, Warren Spahn. Just, you know, an amazing array of memorabilia, you know, a lot of it game used, some just ceremonial, you know, just pictures, you name it, it's over there. So it really is a great representation of our organization and all our inductees that we honor so very, very much.
If there is anybody listening who thinks, you know, I was cleaning out the attic in my parents' house or whatever, they stumble onto some sports memorabilia and they're thinking, you know, maybe they don't want to keep it and this might be something really cool. Do you take donations? Is there a way people can contact the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame and say, I've got, you know, a program from the 1964 AFL champion Bills or any stuff they find? Is any of it worthy of donating? And if so, how to do it?
Absolutely. I mean, I get calls a lot from people just like you say. You know, it was their dads or their grandfathers or just something that passed down in the family. And what I do, what I usually do is I direct them to you know, at first ask what's their intentions? What do they want to do with it? Do they want to sell it? Do they want to donate it?
Mm-hmm.
Do they just want someone to care for it? They just don't know what it is. And we get calls a lot for stuff like that. And some of the things that we've gotten, not a lot, but some of the things that we've gotten have been through that avenue. So, you know, I'm always willing to talk with people, even if it's something we don't need. You know, I can always direct them on how to get rid of it, you know, maybe direct them to a place to auction it or sell it, or just, you know, just like I said, just, you know, make sure it ends up in the right hand. So I would go to our website, gbshof.com. There's a place where you can click on that. You can send us a question. You can even do it on Facebook. We go to our Facebook page and we get messages a lot through there. And that's a great avenue just to, you know, just to see if what you have is something that can be appreciated and loved for eternity. So, you know, like I said, we don't get a lot of that, but once in a while we do, and it turns out great.
So, as I mentioned, John could open up, if he wanted to charge admission, he could open up his own Buffalo Sports Museum in his house with all the stuff he has.
Yeah.
Of everything you have, is there, this is like asking, you know, like kind of, we were talking about Vic's favorite interview with the Bills. He said it's like asking who your favorite child is, so it's kind of unfair. But of everything you have, John, is there a most cherished item that you have?
Well, you know, it's a personal item. It's really nothing that anybody would really care about or pay a plug nickel for. But my dad's baseball glove has always been cherished by me because
cool.
That started me on the journey. I mean, that's basically who introduced me to sports. And I'm sure you know, fathers are so important,
of course,
in the child's development. And that's the thing that I put in my case that, you know, people go, who's that? Is that Duke Snyder glove? Is that Willie Mays glove? No, it's a Paul Boutte glove.
Okay, so let me phrase it this way. Let's say someone, you bring a friend of yours, comes in and you give them a tour of all of your memorabilia. What are some of the things that would make a Buffalo sports fan go, wow, I can't believe you have this. That's so cool.
Yeah, I have the sign that hung outside of War Memorial Stadium, which is pretty cool.
Wow.
That was in a dumpster.
Oh my goodness.
That from a dumpster, believe that or not. That would be in Niagara. That would be in the Niagara Falls City dump. We have two giant sections from the Buffalo Braves basketball court in the basement.
Very
which
cool.
Is really cool. We have turnstiles from the Odd. We have all the different color seats from the Odd. The rock pile. We have the last home plate ever used at War Memorial Stadium, which is really cool. I have Buffalo Bisons hockey jerseys that date back, you know, probably 70 years, 60, 70 years, the old Pepsi bottle cap jerseys and stuff like that. So there's just an amazing array of things that I've collected through the years, and I really, really love doing it. And I share with, you know, basically – most people that I know have been to my basement, and if they have a friend or something, I can verify. I have people coming over today. Every weekend, it's some other group of people or someone else stopping by to see it and take a tour. So if you're ever out my way, Howard, please give me a call. I'd be happy to share it with you.
Do you have – now, we've had a lot of professional teams here. We've had multiple football teams. We've had multiple hockey teams. I'm talking about the Bisons and the Sabres and the old Buffalo football teams before the Bills. The Braves, of course, the Bisons, the Bandits, the Stallions, the Buffalo Wings. I mean, I could keep going on and on. Do you have memorabilia from every team that's been here?
Yeah. I like to think that in my collection of just about every team is complete. You know, you go, there's some teams that were only here for a very short time, like the Buffalo Royals that played in the World Team Tennis Association
there
in
was
1974.
Buffalo had a team in the tennis league back then?
Yeah.
I never knew that.
The Philadelphia Freedoms were the big team of that era. And, you know, Elton John wrote the song about it, and the Buffalo had a team in the World Professional Tennis Association. The Buffalo Breskies, professional women's softball, you know, dates back to the mid to the late 70s. And I have an enormous display of game-used jerseys of the Breskies, things that the National Basketball League was here in 1946.
Wow.
The Buffalo Bison basketball team that are now the Atlanta Hawks were started in Buffalo, New York.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, we have an enormous amount of memorabilia from just about every team in Buffalo sports past. So,
didn't you once publish a book basically with about your collection? And if so, like a bunch of photos were in it. If so, is that still something someone out there that's listening as a big Buffalo's fan could find that book somewhere?
Well, it's out of print. We sold out It was very popular, but it's in all the libraries. The Buffalo Erie County Public Library has copies of it, so if you're interested, check them out. Sometimes you can find a copy on eBay or something like that. Like I said, if I had any left, I'd tell you, but I completely sold out. And my cousin Bruce Andriach, who you might know.
Yeah, I know Bruce.
From the Buffalo News. Was the editor of that, and it turned out very, very well.
I do know Bruce. I'm impressed that it turned out well, considering he was the editor.
So, you do know Bruce.
I'll get a DM from him yelling at me at some point. Of everything you have, what is the oldest item in your possession?
Well, I think the oldest thing that I have comes from the Buffalo Bison baseball franchise, 1879. Wow. I have an unused ticket to one of their games at one of the old stadiums that used to be before Offerman Stadium. I have a ticket from the 1870s, late 1870s, and a lot of stuff from the 1880s, too, with the Bisons. It would have to be a baseball item because they just date back the furthest. But I would say that programs from that era, I have a number of programs from that era, so I would say something baseball Bison related.
Last thing I have for you, and I'm curious, I don't know if you follow the memorabilia market. I want to say a few weeks ago, there was a Babe Ruth game-worn jersey from the game in the World Series where he supposedly had the called shot home run, and it sold for, I don't know, an ungodly amount of money. What do you think is the most valuable item? Not, I'm saying you're not going to sell it, but if you priced everything out, what do you think is the most valuable item you have in your collection?
Oh, wow. I mean, that's a hard question because, you know, some things have never come to market.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, I it's hard to say. I have a beautiful Buffalo Braves warm-up jacket from 1972 that would probably garner in the $25,000 range, if not more.
Nice.
The Braves have become a very big collectible, and not only locally but nationally. It would have to be one of those. The Bison's hockey jerseys are very expensive now, too, in the $20,000-$25,000 range if you can find a really nice historic one, a big player. So, I mean, I would say something like that. I don't have anything in the millions. There's nothing like that, but I would say that.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah,
it's great stuff. John, thank you. As always, we always get you on the show. It's always nice to chat with you about all the memorabilia, and I'm glad to see things are working out well at Dave and Adams Card World for all of the stuff you got out there.
It's been wonderful. You've been great hosts. Please come out and see us. Like you said earlier, the best thing about it, it's free. Just come on in. You don't need a ticket. You don't need any purchase anything. I mean, obviously, Dave and Adams hopes that you do while you're in there, but it's free. And it's a beautiful display. I just put up a 60th anniversary of the 1964 Bills in there. So if you're a Bills fan from the old days, come on in, see American Football League Bills memorabilia that's on display right now.
All right. Hey, John, thank you as always for your time, sir. I appreciate it.
Howard, we'll be talking more as our dinner approaches.
Good. Looking forward to seeing you. John Boutte joining us here, site chairman, Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame. Get a short break. Come right back. Talk to another member of the class of 24. Dr. Bridget Nyland will join us next. It is the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame induction show on WGR.
Now back to the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame Inductee Spotlight Show, presented by David Adams and KeyBank. Once again, here's Howard Simon.
Quick reminder, a program reminder, coming up at 11 o'clock, Sports Saturday, Derek Kramer is in the building. I think he's got his coffee and snacks, so he's ready to go. A member of the class of 24 is joining us right now, and that is Dr. Bridget Nyland, had an outstanding track career at Will South, University at Buffalo, went on to a career that included so many different things, including athletic director at Damon, now Damon University, then Damon College, and Dr. Nyland is with us right now. Bridget, it's Howard Simon. Good morning, and congratulations on this incredible honor.
Thank you so much, Howard, and thank you for having me on the show today.
What does it mean to you when you found out? I know you're involved with the hall. You're on the selection committee. Now, you can't vote for yourself, just so everybody knows. But what does the honor mean to you when you got the call that you were going in?
Yeah, like I was on the board some time ago, and now I was on the media advisory. But So I knew, I'm familiar with some of the folks, but it meant a tremendous amount. I mean, my father went in the hall in 2001, and my cousin's in, John Beilein is in the hall. So it obviously meant a lot. I think more than that, though, it also meant a lot to, I think, all the people that really helped me in my life that were such a huge part of my athletic endeavors, whether it was running or when I was just doing so many different sports at Will South in the town of Amherst. So, you know, I hope that they see, when they see my name, they just know how much of a big part of my life they were. And I wouldn't have had some of the opportunities that I've had if it wasn't for just some really selfless coaches and people in Buffalo, New York.
I would like to follow up on that. I do always, it's the same question, Bridget, for every inductee, because I think it is very important. You touched on your dad there a moment ago. You don't get to this point in life without so many people being so influential and having such an impact on you. Who are some of those people you'd like to mention?
The list is so long. I'm so lucky to have like so many people, but if I were to go, I mean, first and foremost, my parents, and I think a lot of people were familiar with my dad, but, you know, my mom is just such a tremendous woman. She, you know, she had to drop out of college in the World War II. She had me very late in life. She always cheered. I mean, she's the one who put me in all the sports. I mean, my father was great and always there for, to give me guidance and to spark that fire of competitiveness. But my mom was well before her time putting this Title IX baby into so many different sports and letting me find my way. And she was just always there for me too, you know, in ways that, you know, you knew that no matter what happened in a race, like my mom was always good with everything. And half the time she didn't even know I was running. Like, it's just so different than the world we live in now. Sure. I felt none of that athletic pressure from my mother. And my father didn't put a lot on us either. I think we, all of us in our family and the huge Nyland tribe or team or whatever you want to call it, we all want to be our best, and athletics was certainly a path that we saw as a way to be our best. But I just can't say enough really about both my parents. They played such a great role. And then I'm the youngest of seven. So like, I have six other parents in my family, and each of them contributed to my well-being in different ways. I have to give a shout out to my sister Maggie, who is about four. Well, I don't know. She probably doesn't want to age herself. So she's a bit older than me. A lot of her friends had kids my age. But she has made so many sacrifices, and my sister Martha Lamparelli, they in particular gave up, I think, a lot of opportunities sometimes in their early 20s and lives to come back and help me as the youngest sibling. And so I will be forever grateful. I've lived in their houses in and out of my life, and and they've always been people that I've can try to. And of course, my brother David has always been a role model for me. He's a longtime basketball coach at Penn State Barrand. I remember being a little girl watching him shoot foul shots night after night, day after day in our front yard, and just being like so inspired by the determination that he brought to his sports every day, and that always carried with me.
And there's no question, we could probably do an hour just on the Nyland family and all the sports connections through that family. It's like this big family tree would sprout into all of these success stories. At UB, Bridget, you ran track, broke a bunch of records, won individual conference titles, captain conference title teams in track and cross country. When you look back at your time at UB, what are some of your fondest memories?
Well, another person that I am just ever grateful for is Coach Dick Berry. He was the head track and field coach. He very much made me the person that I became in terms of the business mindset. I learned so much from Coach Berry. I can't even, like, not only about running, but just about life and just about athletic administration. He was critical in getting the 1992 World Games here, and then the World Masters Championships and the NCAA Track and Field Championships. And what was so great about him is he always like opened up all those opportunities to the athletes on our team. And he gave a tremendous, and he knowing kind of, I think, where he saw my career going, my senior year, he said to Bridget, every time we go to a meet, I want to make sure you're getting introduced to coaches. And so he would like, I mean, imagine saying that, like he's got 40 some kids, but he would take the time to like make sure I connected, or told me like, hey, did you go talk to the coach at Western Illinois yet? And I'd be like, no, coach, get over there, go introduce yourself, you know? And so him, obviously, Nelson Townsend, just in general, was a man who taught me a ton about equity and just looking at life from different perspectives. And then finally, my teammate, Judith Novak, pushed me throughout high school and college. She was better, much, much better runner than I was. I was constantly chasing her. She came in a year after me, so I broke a bunch of records. And then the year after, Judith came into UB and broke them after. But I couldn't have wanted that more. for an incredible person in my life, a lifelong friend, and just an outstanding honor.
You mentioned equity. I want to ask you about that, because while you're running track, you get in, you were kind of ahead of your time, I think, in an era where we now have name, image, likeness. We have people talking about athletes getting into unions, athletes getting paid, you know, standing up for athletes and their rights. You were involved in this way back when. You chaired the Student Athlete Advisory Committee. You were the first student athlete appointed to the NCAA Division I Management Council to look out for the interests of student athletes. Why did you want to get involved in it back then?
So it's a too long of a story for this segment, but I was negatively impacted by NCAA rules. Mm-hmm. I actually went to a Division III school in my first year of college, Dickinson College, with a great Don Nichter, a fabulous coach, Lancaster native, down in Pennsylvania. But you had to pay for school, and I didn't have a lot of money, and I started running really well and realized that I couldn't afford school. So I came back up and I had to choose some schools. I chose UB, and UB had just hired an NCAA compliance director. They were just Division I. The other schools, Syracuse and Canisius and Bonaventure, they had been in the NCAA Division I longer. So UB brought me on campus, and I had a full scholarship. That's why, you know, went and thought I had a full scholarship. And I'm on campus 6 weeks. I hire the first compliance director, and they realize there's an NCAA rule that prevents kids from coming Division III to Division I from accepting any athletic aid their first year. Like, that's how draconian the rules were back there. And the idea was, is they were worried that, you know, I don't think they were worried that, people were going to go raid Dickinson College for their cross-country team. But, of course, everyone's an apple, an orange, and a banana on the NCAA, but they always, you know, make rules that unnecessarily affect the whole fruit basket. But so I had that really, and I complained a lot. Like, I lost my scholarship. I had a refigure out. I took on jobs my first year. Here I was at this Division I institution, one of the top runners on the team, breaking records, winning. And I couldn't even, I had to hold a job. And then what happened is then the next year they told me I had to quit all my jobs. And I'm like, well, why do I have to quit my jobs?
Right.
So I was just, you know, I can be loud. And I was loud in Nelson Townsend's ears. And he was like, you know what? Why don't you go to the NCAA on this committee?
Yeah.
Go complain to them directly. And I worked with some fabulous people at the NCAA, Janet Justice. Really, when I think back, the risks she took, allowing us to be as vocal and loud as we were as student athletes. And you know what? We ended up changing. We changed the employment rule, and that was the biggest one. The other rule that was negatively affected a UB basketball player at the time was, if you didn't hit your qualifications, you automatically went down from 4 seasons of eligibility to 3 seasons of eligibility. And it was really unfair because a lot of kids come in. They don't come in from a great school district like Williamsville. You know, they don't come from all the different privileges I've had. And so sometimes they don't hit those marks, but then they start to they find their groove in college. And it was really unfair that they were only allowed 3 seasons to participate, even though they maybe turned themselves into really great students. And it affected all sports again, not just men's basketball. So those rules came down, and I was really, really excited to be part of that. And it taught me a lot just about using your voice for the right thing.
Bridget, I've only got about a minute left, but I wanted to make sure we got to this because you were involved. You've been involved in so many great organizations and causes, but one of them was the Project Play West New York, which came about from the Ralph Wilson Jr. Foundation. Can you talk a little bit about that and what it does?
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. It's an amazing initiative. It's created by Mary Wilson. It dates back to the United Way, Western New York Girls in Sports, which is another great organization in Western New York. These are really, really important to me because kids do not have the access to sports like we used to. It's a pay-to-play model, and none of my siblings would be the athletes that they were if there was a pay-to-play model like it is today. And Project Play really looks at that, and they also kind of look at the harshness of the youth sports culture today and really changing that conversation. One of my great mentors and collaborators initially in that endeavor was the legendary Dick Gallagher. Mm-hmm. May he rest in peace.
Yep.
And he really just shared so much about really what youth sports is about, is building not great athletes but great people, and we can't lose it to only the kids who can afford it get to play it.
Bridget, congratulations. Obviously well-deserved with everything you've been able to do over your career on and off the athletic fields. So thank you again for coming on with us. And again, congratulations and have a great time at the dinner.
Thank you so much, Howard. Have a great day.
Thank you, too. Dr. Bridget Nyland, member of the class of 2024 of the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame. We'll come back, wrap the show in just a moment on WGR. Hey, Hey, I want to thank Vic Carucci and Dr. Bridget Nyland and John Boutte for kicking things off. This is the first of four straight shows that we're going to do Saturday mornings from 10 to 11 to let you know more about the class of 2024 for the Greater Buffalo Sports Hall of Fame. Again, the ceremony and the dinner is on Tuesday, November 12th at the Buffalo Niagara Convention Center. You can purchase tickets now, and you can take advantage of the early bird ticket sale price. Now, this only goes through the end of this month. You'll be able to find out everything you know and buy tickets and all that neat stuff by going to gbshof.com, okay? gbshof.com. $130 for an individual ticket, $1,300 for a table of 10. You can take out a program ad to congratulate an inductee. And if you'd like to help out the all-important Amateur Sports Development Fund, you will find a link at their website to make a donation to that as well. Again, tickets are available, gbshof.com. We will be back next Saturday morning with a bunch more special guests. Thank you, Evan DePasquale, for producing this show this morning. Joe Kelly, Derek Kramer are here next. They are moments away from Sports Saturday. Enjoy the show with them and have a great stress-free football Sunday, Bills fans. We hope. Bye.